Throughout the centuries, Christ has been the only inhabitant of this earth. Through some illumined souls, Christ appears and teaches us. And always, the teaching is identical, and yet it is individually presented. Underlying all of the teachings is the truth of the one living Spirit, without opposite. And then Jesus the Christ presents it one way, Moses the Christ presents it another way, the prophets present it another way, Solomon presented it another way. Archaeologists tell us that under the highest hill of Jerusalem, under the Mosque of Omar, there are still the remains of the inner chambers of Solomon's temple. They might even be right. It was in this temple of wisdom that the higher truths were taught, in the secret chambers. And the temple has come down to us as one of the great miracles of wonders of the world. Yesterday you saw timber line, and you marveled at its structure, its cost, its hand craftsmanship. Solomon's temple overshadowed anything that had ever been built. He had his own private WPA. It is said that the cost in dollars today would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 or $40 billion. And legend tells us that he had 30 million workmen, all told, working on it. There were thousands who quarried the stone, trimmed it, thousands more who transported it. He had 3,000 supervisors to oversee the work of these servants of the Lord. But I'd like you to know that all of these men, all of these builders, are a symbol of all of the thoughts of your being brought together within you in one common purpose. The trimmers, the quarriers, the transporters, the supervisors are all your thoughts marshaled into a concerted plan to build a temple, not made with hands. Whereas Jesus the Christ demonstrated the temple not made with hands, which could not be buried, which was ever free of material law, which never was put into a tomb, although it seemed that way to those who allegedly put him there. They never buried the temple not made with hands. And that is a lesson history has missed. Now, Solomon's function was to build a temple in the outer. With all kinds of symbols, so that every detail of the temple was actually the temple of your soul body. He was a master builder to teach us that we must construct the very same temple in the inner that he constructed in the outer. And it was the textbook of those that he taught. As they wandered through the temple, everything they saw was a replica in the visible of an attribute of their own soul body. You will read about it in 1 Kings, 1 Chronicles. But if you're reading about a physical temple, you're learning nothing. It is completely filled with clues, keys, inner wisdom to prepare the way for man to see the nature of death before death, and that death before death is the way death is swallowed up in victory. One of the beautiful things about the kingdom of God is the method in which spirit preserves its purity. You cannot enter except in your soul body, which is pure. And as you know, in some countries, people will make you take your shoes off when you enter. Whether they know it or not, that is a symbol of you cannot enter the kingdom of God unless you are in your pure soul body. Some of these things live on and become customs of people without their knowing the derivation of the custom. And we have other customs we follow without knowing their derivation or their initial purpose. Some of the customs that went on about the shewbread and the incense followed today have no meaning whatsoever. It's like a literal interpretation of moral behavior, worshiping God upstairs. But we're going to see that there was nothing performed by the so-called workmen who built this temple that was not under total direct guidance of the Spirit. They were constructing your soul body into the visible appearance so that you could look at it and decipher the hidden meaning, and then retire into your chamber, develop your soul capacities, feel the living presence of your soul body, formless, incorporeal, eternal in the heavens, and then walk forth in that conscious awareness of it in the kingdom of God. Nevermore to live in a world where the law of God is not the only law. A very significant thing missed, even as you read the Bible, it's difficult to find it, and you'll see why as I go into the first area that I'd like to discuss with you. In 1 Chronicles, we're going to look at chapter 28, and at the 9th verse, we have the king, David. And David is now about to turn in his resignation. He's turning it all over to his son Solomon. And David says to all those assembled in the city, I could not build the house of the Lord because I was a man of war. I wanted to, I hoped to, I had every intention to, but the Lord said to me, no, you have been a man of war. And then the Lord said to me, my son Solomon, He will be the one to build the house of the Lord. And so now they're all assembled, the captains, the leaders, the princes, the stewards, the valiant ones, all those of his kingdom in the flesh. And he announces to them that his son Solomon will soon be the king. And what you and I must know is that Solomon at that moment was 19 years old. What follows about Solomon then is really a statement about what happens to one who is 19 years old. 19 being 10, 1-9. 10 being soul. When Solomon reaches the consciousness of his soul body, the kingdom is turned over to him. Do you see the symbolism? When you reach the consciousness of your soul body, you won't need David to come and say, "Now I turn over to you my kingdom." It's an automatic thing when you're in the realm of soul. The kingdom of God is within your soul. And so we're going to hear what happens to Solomon because he's in the soul realm, because he's conscious of his soul, because he lives out of his soul, because his soul body is immaculate, because he is beyond disease already, beyond death already, beyond pain, beyond sickness. And you will notice, if you're a very close student of this particular section of the Bible, that when Solomon passes out of the picture, he is 110 years old. He's 19, just starting the soul realm, which he has already vanquished. He has overcome the world mind, in other words. And when he dies, he is 110. And you see the significance there? He has attained the full stature of spiritual manhood. He's entering the 12th realm, the day of rest, because he has found his Christhood. And his 110 years old is a significant factor because it means he isn't dying. He's moving out of the 6th realm into the 7th. He has accepted the 7th day in his consciousness, but now he has earned the right to move into it because he has accepted it. His death is his passage into the 7th realm, the 3rd heaven. It is also a prelude of your soul consciousness, your soul body, your transition from the 6th realm of 11 into the 7th realm of 12. The eternal day, when there is no more night. Now you know that this is consistent with the teaching of Moses and later Jesus. It's the golden thread of truth that appears through all of the Bible when we're ready and willing to do what Solomon did. You may not recognize it in the Bible from some of the things that are written, like Solomon's song, the Song of Solomon. But Solomon had surrendered his human selfhood. He lived in the body not made with hands because he had surrendered the false sense of human selfhood. By the time he was 19, he had learned. 19, of course, can occur at the age of 26 or 56 or 4 or 5 or, as in Jesus' case, at the age of 12. the age of 12, he was already past 19. He had already passed soul consciousness. So what we are seeking out of our soul seminar is to attain the spiritual age of 19, which is the beginning of eternal youth. I think it's quite momentous to notice what David was saying at this point, so let's look at it. Thou, Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart and with a willing mind, for the Lord searcheth all hearts and understandeth all the imaginations of the thoughts, if thou seek him. He will be found of thee. But if thou forsake him, he will cast thee off forever. We're told here that the seeking of the spiritual nature of being is the finding of it. We're told here to have no faint heart, that if you are seeking your spiritual self, you will find it. If you're seeking something else, you won't find it. Now, you may have felt during the last few days a certain riveting toward one specific goal. I hope so, because this is the seeking of the Spirit. When all else seems unimportant except the finding that which you're seeking, you'll find that you're bringing all these thoughts together, this great assemblage of princes and captains and stewards and the valiant ones, all are converging in one purpose, to find my spiritual self. That's what's happening here. And he's telling Solomon to do that. But he's really telling you and me. Solomon already knows that.
Take heed now, for the Lord hath chosen thee to build an house for the sanctuary. Be strong and do it.
Now, the house for the sanctuary that we're to build in is our conscious awareness of the presence of God, the presence of the will of God, the presence of the power of God, the presence of the love of God. We're to build our conscious awareness of the presence of divine everything, rejecting all that says, I am here and I am not divine. There is no such thing. And this is the single-minded purpose that instantly recognizes the intruder which tries to enter our thought. Build the house of the Lord is building the consciousness of the presence of infinite divinity. Infinite meaning no opposite. If all that is in this room is God, then there are no people here. If all that is in this room is spirit, then there is no matter here. And as you build your consciousness in this direction, that which at first seems impossible and to human consciousness laughable becomes a mountain of melting snow. It's amazing how thought can be as positive of one thing one day and equally positive of another thing the next day. And yet you will find that this melting snow will slowly disappear as you continue to do it, to build the house of the Lord, the knowledge of the presence of Spirit alone, taking everything else as a challenge. Do it, he says to Solomon.
And then gave a day to Solomon, his son, the pattern of the porch and of the houses thereof, and of the treasures thereof, and of the upper chambers thereof, and of the inner parlors thereof, and of the place of the mercy seat. It goes on and on and on, telling what David now gives to Solomon. But it isn't David giving this to Solomon.
David is the symbol of the king. David here is the symbol of Christ pouring through Solomon this inner wisdom. And all of these things, the porches, the chambers, the courtyards, these are all the symbols of inner wisdom which Christ pours into your consciousness when your consciousness is soul consciousness. David and Solomon represent Christ and soul at this point. Your soul is Solomon, and your Christ is David, and Christ pours through your soul all of the added things, as well as all of the inner wisdom of the kingdom of God. And that's all this is about. It's not about upper chambers and lower chambers. It's not about palaces or temples. It's about Christ pouring through your soul. The moment you have attained a measure of your soul, you are building Solomon's temple with millions of workmen. Much invisible help. And you are developing the consciousness that suddenly finds itself living in the perfect kingdom of God. The human is no longer there. The spiritual self is realized. The temple is completed. And lo, there is no death, swallowed up in victory. We're going to look at 2 Chronicles, the first chapter and the 7th verse. In that night, Solomon now is the king. And in one night, God appears unto Solomon and says unto him, ask what I shall give thee. Now suppose this had happened to you. Ask what I shall give thee. What would your response be? Maybe a week ago, you would have said, the rent is due next week. Or you might have said, I want to put my children through college. Or get rid of this pain that I have. Or somebody else is competing with me and driving me out of business. Oh, I can think of a million things that I would have said at one time to that. I would have had a long list, like a laundry list. Ask what I shall give you. And there wouldn't be a thing on that list that would have been worth having at this present moment. But then it would have seemed like, this is wonderful. God is asking me what I want. And I, you know, it's like Santa Claus at Christmas time. Now what would you say today? If in your consciousness comes the Spirit of God saying, what do you wish? Solomon was faced with that. His answer is a clue to what our answer must be. And just in the 10th verse, here's what it says. Solomon said, "Give me now wisdom and knowledge, that I may go out and come in." What did he mean? How many of us would have asked for wisdom and knowledge to go out and come in? We see now why Solomon was called wise. "Seek ye first the kingdom, and all things will be added unto you." Forget the rent. If you have the kingdom, you own the house. You don't even pay rent. You pay it to yourself. Forget the pain. If you find the kingdom, you have a body that is forever and painless. Seek ye first the kingdom. Solomon said, "I want to come in, go in, and come out at will." He wanted to be able to live at will, outside the form, outside corporeality, and then come back into the appearance of corporeality to serve his people. Just as Jesus appeared in form but was not in the form, to go out, to come back. If you have the capacity to step out of form and come back, you will find that you have attained that measure of freedom which is beyond the human, and in which all things are added. Now, do you really think God said this to Solomon? I don't. I know that when you're in the soul consciousness, this is what happens, but it isn't a conversation between God and you. The conversation explains it to the human mind, but it isn't what happens. When you're in the soul consciousness, the Father within, which is not confined, goes in and out. It simply happens. This is a happening. Explained in human words, it would appear as God speaking to Solomon and Solomon speaking back to God. But it automatically happens to anyone in soul consciousness. You go out and you come in. You step out of this world into the kingdom of God. And there's proof that you step into the kingdom of God. I think Solomon wants us to see that. Because now in the 12th verse, it is said that God now replies to him, "Wisdom and knowledge is granted unto thee." And so now that he has wisdom and knowledge, meaning to know God aright, the knowledge of spirit, the knowledge of God. In other words, because he's 19, because he is in soul consciousness, every time you see that 1-9 or 5-5 or 4-6, whatever it is that adds up to 10, somebody's telling you about the soul. And because he's in soul consciousness, he now receives wisdom and knowledge. But here, something else. "And I will also give thee riches and wealth and honor, such as none of the kings have had that have been before thee. Neither shall there be any after thee have the like." He didn't even ask for health, wealth, riches, honor, status. Just wisdom just knowledge of God. Can we remember that? Because when you are asking for things, you might even get them, and that's all you'll get. And they will deteriorate. The rent that you pay today will have to be paid next month again. The things that we ask for, the better physical bodies. Wrong direction. We're working to emancipate ourselves from the concept of a human body. You may hear this more than you want to hear it, but the theme of truth is that you are not walking in a human body. That there is no one in a human body. And you'll have to hear that again and again and again until you really believe it. Until you refuse to be a nothing living in a nothing. Until you see that this is the Christ way. That this is the possible way. That this is the attainable way. And this is the divine way. And so, just like Job, all the added things now pour forth. Solomon becomes a wealthy man without even trying to be. But he's wealthy in the riches of the kingdom of God. Nothing is then impossible. Neither the pain nor power of this world can impose itself upon the 19-year-old consciousness, the soul consciousness. And from that moment on, you are taught by God. You're in direct contact with infinite spirit. It becomes your shepherd. Now, if there was an isolated case that brought this out, we could have our doubts. And if there hadn't been a Jesus, I'm sure none of this would have as much meaning to us. And if there hadn't been a John and a Paul, even Jesus wouldn't have had as much meaning to us. But right up from the year 3000 BC through to Solomon and his temple in the year approximately 1000 BC, into Jesus, then Paul and John, right up into the middle of the 19th century, when it was stabilized in Christian Science and brought out again, into Joel, into this minute, we are following the thread of thou shalt have no other gods before spirit, no other life before spirit, no other anything before spirit. There are many legends connected with Solomon, somewhat like Saint Francis of Assisi. It is said that he could walk with the birds and the animals. They had a mutual love affair going with all animals. It is said that he could construct things out of his own inner imagination. That he could have built the temples and pyramids of Egypt if he had such a mind to do so. But there is a deeper meaning in these things. It is that we are now imaging forth our own forms and our own bodies and our own physical universe. It is being imaged forth through us. Solomon was able to image forth the divine universe. His inner thoughts were divine, because soul receives divine thought and could image forth that from the divine into this appearance world. You might say that he made a higher grade of pictures than we make. And we are developing the capacity to image forth the invisible kingdom of God. Now, in Solomon's temple, as you entered, there were two huge pillars of bronze. And inside the temple, there were cherubim near the ark. And this, the two cherubim, with their outstretched wings, the two pillars of bronze, and the various other twos that appear throughout are a repetition of one idea. And that is one of the inner secrets of the temple, not made with hands. There are many other kinds of symbols, the palm trees, the open flowers, all of this engraved on the doors inside. The open flowers indicating spiritual centers that have been opened. But those bronze pillars, the two of them, stand for one, the feminine, and the other, the masculine. It's going to be important later when we look at honor thy mother and thy father. And those two cherubim stand for the masculine and the feminine. And what does that mean to us, the masculine and the feminine? After you get the explanation of the symbol, you still got to understand the explanation. Now, this is what is being taught at this point. When you walk through into that temple through those two bronze pillars, it means that you have united them. It means that you have united the feminine aspect and the masculine aspect of your being. And that still is not the full explanation. You think of there are feminine qualities and there are masculine qualities, but that's not it. That's not it. Don't go around, like some woman recently said, I'm going to sit next to this man in the car because I've got to strengthen my masculine attributes. She meant it. I heard her say it. She's not with us. She didn't strengthen her masculine attributes at all. The masculine has a different meaning than we have thought of. The disciples were somewhat peeved or churlish about the fact that the mother of Jesus was so prominent in running their little group at times. They complained to the master. He says, she will be made male. Don't worry about it. You've seen that in the book of Thomas. That's what he told them. And they didn't laugh about it. They knew what he meant. When she was the living soul that brought him into visibility, she was soul. That's feminine. She had not been able to maintain that after that moment. And so she still had to strengthen the masculine side of her nature. Spirit is the masculine side. soul, which is still made of spirit, is the feminine side. But here's the meaning. The masculine is the inner, and the feminine is the outer. When your inner is the will of God, the light patterns of God, the plan of God, and your outer is the manifestation of that divine will, then the inner, which is masculine, and the outer, which is feminine, are one. Now, most people do not demonstrate or manifest the will of God, and that's the lack of their feminine attributes. Feminine means manifestation. Masculine is the will, and it is the inner. And so when you come to honor your father, mother, it's going to mean something to you that you've got to learn how to combine the inner with the outer into one, so that the outer corresponds to the inner, and it's not separated from the inner by personal will. Then you have the two cherubim with wings touching. You have the two pillars that you walk through. Your middle path is through the masculine and the feminine, and behind you the doors close. You have united the inner and the outer. That is the meaning of the union of the two aspects of soul. Now, divine manifestation is the feminine aspect of your being. Divine will is the male aspect of your being. Each must be coordinated through your complete receptivity to the Spirit through your soul. This is a preliminary union necessary for the fullness of the stature of Christ. Of course, Solomon, having accomplished this, was then able to build visible architectural symbols and teach from those symbols to those who were ready. In the world today, most of the manifestation we see is not divine. The feminine aspect is completely inadequate. And it is inadequate because the male aspect has not been realized either. The will of God in us is not dormant, but we are asleep to it. And only when we awaken ourselves to the will of God in us can the divine manifestation flow. Seek ye first the kingdom, the will of the Father in you, and all things will be added. So when divine manifestation is flowing, when the blessings are released, you'll know that the male and female attributes of your being have been united. When Joel had that tape years ago about the tumbler, how the outside of the glass and the inside of the glass were really the one same piece of glass, that's what he was saying. I remember how many months we all puzzled over just what he was saying. But he was saying that the male and the female had been united within us. There's much more to be said about this union. Now, if you're willing to accept material world manifestation, you are pushing away the feminine attributes of your being. You've got to look through the material world manifestation into the nothingness of it go further back into being, aligning yourself with soul. I think some of this aligning comes in here. There's a feast. I think we'll come to it. We're going to look at 1 Kings, the 6th chapter and the 1st verse. It came to pass in the 480th week after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the 4th year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month Ziph, which is the 2nd month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. Now the significant point there is that it happened in the 480th year that he began to build the house of the Lord. First he had to be 19, which is, he was in soul consciousness. Now, in the 480th year, 4, 8, 12, right? Forget the zero. He was living in the seventh day of consciousness, wasn't he? We know that 12 is the symbol of the fullness of being, and it is the equivalent of the Sabbath day, the seventh day of consciousness. Because he lived in soul, he could live in the seventh day of consciousness. I'd like you to see that there is an identical meaning behind 7 and 12, and there is also a certain dissimilarity between them, which will probably be explained as we go along. But for the moment, you can accept 12 as the finished consciousness, also 7 as the finished consciousness. There are times when 7 is something else, the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new one. But he was obeying the 4th commandment of Moses. In his 480th year, he began to build a temple. Now that he had attained spiritual manhood, the temple was automatically being built within him, and therefore manifesting in the outer. That was his function on this earth, to manifest outwardly the inner temple that was being constructed in his consciousness. And so now the temple is being built, not a visible temple that people saw, because that's not what you and I are interested in. He was building the temple not made with hands, not the one with the hammers. He was building the inner temple of the body of the soul, which survives and never incarnates, never goes through the ups and downs of human karma. He was learning to graduate from the 4th world. Otherwise, all of this would be pointless. We can all die easily. Nobody has to teach us that. But Solomon was teaching us how to live. Remember now, all of this has no meaning to us unless we are in soul consciousness. That is the prerequisite. When we are in the consciousness of soul, all this is automatic. You see, grace is doing all this, and that's what it's doing in Solomon. And because it was his destiny to outwardly picturize what's happening in his consciousness, he was now beginning the outside building of the temple. Let's jump down to the 7th verse of the same chapter, 1 Kings 6. And the house, when it was in building, was built of stone, made ready before it was brought thither. We thought prefabricated stone was something pretty new around here, didn't we? He used it. It was made of stone, made ready before it was brought thither. What kind of stone was that? Is it only physical stone, this prefabricated stone? Do you see, he was living on divine truth. Prefabricated before it was brought thither, his soul was reaching into the inner self and pulling forth divine truth, divine manna, divine substance. That's what that song was. That's what your soul does. That's why the human mind is so helpless. It can't do any of this. Only your soul does it. What are you seeing in this temple? You're seeing your own soul and what it does. You're seeing the inner workings of your soul. It reaches forth and draws forth prefabricated stone, prefabricated truth before the world was. It reaches into the kingdom of God and draws forth its own nourishment. It does what no human person can do. It has access to all that the Father hath. Son, all that I have is thine. But God was speaking to your soul. Bang. Well, they're building a house somewhere else, too. I understand that they run about 8 hours apart, so we have 8 hours of grace. I hope nobody sees any symbolism in that, because I really can't find it. If you do, I'd like to know about it later. And then, before it was brought thither, it was prefabricated, so that there was neither hammer, nor axe, nor any tool of iron heard in the house, while it was... Well, maybe there's the symbolism right there. They were building a house without sound. Totally. They just put in the stones. They had no hammer to make sound and no axe. Now, what is that saying to you? It's saying that you build a soul body through silence. Right? Your inner silence builds the soul body. But that doesn't mean just the lips. When you're not talking, doesn't mean you're silent. Silence is deeper than not talking. It means the silence of the senses. It means the silence of every phase of your human sense of being. And so when you see someone who is looking without speaking, and has attained some measure of the inner silence, don't feel that they're not interested in you because they're not saying anything. But they are being true to the inner silence. They are not letting their senses chatter. The senses chatter just like the lips. The senses react.